OK, so this is work, joint work that I did with a student of mine, Bilal Shah. And let me just shift this because otherwise I'm going to keep walking back and forth through the beam. OK, it's joint work with a student of mine, Bilal Shah. I go back and forth in my mind between whether or not this is sort of very, very trivial or very, very clever, or possibly very, very trivial and yet still very, very clever. You can decide yourselves and hopefully let me know. So just briefly, I'm going to talk about what is steganography and why should there be such a thing as a quantum version of it. Then I'm going to go through a couple of protocols, starting with a classical protocol based on the very simple idea of hiding information by disguising it as noise in a binary symmetric channel. And what we'll see is that that idea generalizes almost painlessly to a quantum protocol where you're hiding quantum information in a depolarizing channel. Then I'm going to look at a different type of protocol, which does a lot better than this one in the case where there's no intrinsic noise in the channel, and it, probably in the case where there is, but exactly how one does that in the best way, we still don't know. And I would be very happy for people to whom it's immediately obvious what the best way of doing this is. And then I'll wrap up with the questions that we haven't answered yet. And hopefully what I think are the interesting things. So what is steganography? So steganography is basically, you don't need to read all of that. Steganography is the art and or science of hiding information basically by making some secret piece of information look like something innocent. The first example of this that we know of was recorded by Herodotus. He describes a case where to send a secret message, it was tattooed on the shaved head of a slave. By the time the slave arrives at his destination, his hair has grown back, and so the message is hidden. The recipient can then shave the slave's head and read the message. This is an inefficient technique. But given the communication speeds of the time, it was probably about as good as you could do by any other means. There are other techniques from antiquity as well, carving a message underneath the wax on a wax tablet and so forth. The term steganography was coined in the 16th century, and it just basically means covered writing in Greek. Some people define steganography very, very broadly to include any form of concealment of information, in which case steganography would actually encompass cryptography and everything involved there. I'm going to use it in a much narrower sense. In cryptography, you are hiding information in a way that if someone gets a copy of the information, they will know that they have a copy of something secret, but they are ideally unable to extract the information from it. Steganography derives its security from the person not even realizing that there's a message there. So the information is hidden, usually by being embedded in a much longer, innocent piece of information. And modern versions of this abound. For instance, in picture files, one can hide information by sticking it in the least significant bits of all of the color values of each of the pixels. These make almost no difference at all to the eye. But if you know to go and look, you can extract information in that way. So the modern take on trying, so because this notion of security is somewhat fuzzy, I mean, how do you quantify the ability or inability to recognize that a message is there, or how do you quantify how innocent a message looks, or something like that? The modern study of steganography is actually not all that old. Unlike cryptography, where the tools of information theory have been brought to bear for decades, this is one of the earliest sort of attempts to make a quantitative model. And it takes a sort of paradigm for when someone would use use steganography. So here you have your sender and receiver, Alice and Bob, as everyone knows. This is Alice Walker and Robert Redford. And they are both prisoners in a prison controlled by the evil warden, Eve, Betty Davis. She looks really pretty evil in this picture, actually. For whatever reason, she thinks that rehabilitating prisoners, it's good to allow them to communicate or whatever. But see, she certainly doesn't want them to plan to escape. So she monitors all of their communications to make sure they don't get up to anything nasty. However, unknown to Eve, Alice and Bob, before they were locked up, shared a secret key, which I'll assume is an arbitrarily long random string of bits known only to them. So the question is, using this shared secret key, can they hide information in their innocent-looking communiques such that Eve doesn't recognize that that information is there? And ideally, if she looks for it, she wouldn't be able to read it, even if she tried, but such that Bob can read it. So this is a classical view. What would a quantum type of steganography require? Well, first, we need to come up with a reasonable idea of what constitutes an innocent-looking quantum message. I mean, right off, that sounds sort of strange. What does it mean for a quantum message to look innocent or to not look innocent, for that matter? The second is, assuming we can define that, how can Alice and Bob hide information in it in such a way that Eve can't read it? And how much information can they hide before they will inevitably make Eve suspicious? Okay. In the previous case, they were sending classical information. They were sending, you know, ordinary messages behind, you know, pull out the loose brick behind the recreation courtyard at 5 o'clock or something like that. But could they hide quantum information? Can they stick a quantum state into their communiques? I mean, it's a quantum message, so intrinsically that seems like it might be possible. But if they do that, how do they hide it from Eve? And what we'll do is we'll start with a very simple protocol, which will be the model that we'll use for most of this talk. I'm going to point out just briefly a difference between this model of steganography and the usual model of cryptography. Now, superficially, it looks somewhat similar. You have a sender and a receiver. There's an eavesdropper that can intercept communications in the middle. You have a channel that may have noise in it. And in general, Alice and Bob may share a secret key. So what are the differences? Well, in standard cryptography, the paradigm, if you will, assumes that Alice and Bob are legitimate users of this communication channel, and that the eavesdropper is illegitimate. In other words, she's a spy. She's someone who doesn't really have the right to listen in, but Alice and Bob can't keep her out. I mean, that's obviously, you can use it in other cases as well, but that's kind of the picture that we have. So there's no reason for Alice and Bob to disguise the fact that they are communicating. They don't care about whether Eve knows that they're communicating. What they care is that she not be able to read the messages that they send. Okay. And typically, when you do cryptography, taking the extreme case of a one-time pad, the message that they send, the encrypted message they send, will be about the same length as the hidden message, and it will look to Eve like gibberish, or to anyone like gibberish, if she doesn't have the key. Now, in steganography, Eve is the warden. Eve is in a position of authority. Eve has the right to tell Alice and Bob what to do, and they're trying to sneak around behind her back. So Eve could be the warden of the prison, she could be the NSA, she could be the Stasi, you know, make up your own scenario, whatever seems most exciting to you. But here, because Eve is in a position of authority, it's very important that Alice and Bob not even clue Eve in that there's any secret information being passed at all. Therefore, a stream of gibberish would certainly look suspicious, because most people, when they communicate, don't send gibberish, in my experience, except, you know, some of my relatives might approach it, but that's let's not get into that, actually. And in order to fulfill this goal, sorry, my family life is not really the topic of this talk. So in order to fulfill this goal of... Okay, after this I've got to rush home and reread all of their postcards. No, I'm sorry. So the information, in order to make this look innocent, typically the message that Alice sends to Bob is going to be much, much longer than the actual length of the hidden message, right? And that will be necessary because as you try to pack more and more information, it's going to be harder and harder to make it look innocent. Okay, and conversely, the longer your message is, the easier. So a few other people have looked at the question of whether or not there's some quantum version of So here are a few papers. We started from this idea by Julio J. Abana-Cloche, who probably many of you know is one of the editors of PhysReb-A. Anyway, his scheme is actually extremely simple. In his idea, you are hiding information by disguising it as errors in a noisy channel. So Alice is sending some quantum state psi to Bob. She encodes this in a 3-qubit error-correcting code. In this case, it's really essentially classical because it's a 3-bit bit flip code. So there's nothing especially quantum about this example, but of course you could generalize it to more general quantum codes. Then she deliberately imposes an error. And the choice of an error on bit 1, 2, or 3, or no error, encodes up to 2 bits of information. When Bob receives this, he's able to extract the error syndrome, which tells him which error occurred. And these 2 bits of the error syndrome are the steganographic message. So the idea is that this is innocent looking because it just looks like sending a garden variety state psi with just some noise that happened as it passed through the channel. Yes?
So she's using a noiseless channel, or is this extra error
so
what the channel looks like?
Right. So when we generalize this and try to make it rigorous what it is to be innocent, we will consider both of those cases. In this case, there's no intrinsic noise in the channel. All the noise comes from Alice. Right. So they're making Eve has to believe the channel is noisy when it's really not. Okay, so...
Does Eve know about what encoding and decoding procedure?
So because Eve is in a position of authority, so I should probably say what I'm assuming about Eve. Eve has the right to demand from Alice and Bob, what error-correcting code are you using? What kind of state is it that you're putting in there? You know, if it's part of an entangled state, she can, if she wishes, demand the other half of the entangled state in order to check that it's really the state that they say it is, and so forth. So... So we assume that Eve does know what encoding they're using and that she basically has a right to demand from them exactly how they're communicating. Okay. Okay, so here's the scheme. It's a very simple one. And here he's taking the idea of an innocent message is you're sending a quantum state for some legitimate purpose. It's the output of a quantum computation or whatever. And the hidden information is hidden by making it look like it's just errors in a channel. Now, this version of that is very naive, however. I mean, if you had a 3-bit code that can correct at most one error, then if you wanted to send 2 bits with this, then the error rate that Eve would see would be much higher, I mean, than you would normally think. I mean, 3 times out of 4, there's an error in this code word. You wouldn't use this code with that, and that could very well make Eve suspicious. Now, obviously, if you send just a single code word, you know, maybe you were just unlucky that time and there was an error. But if you want to do this repeatedly, quickly, Eve is going to realize there's something going on. Okay. The second thing is, if she guesses there's information being hidden there, it's really easy for her to read it. She just gathers all the error syndromes and she can read out whatever they do. So, and the third thing is this is a way of sending classical information. Can we generalize the same idea to send quantum information? So can we solve this problem, make it look the way a noisy channel should look? And can we solve this problem that the information is encrypted as well as hidden? That's not absolutely essential, but it's nice. And the last thing is, can you generalize that to send quantum information? So let's start with this idea and just try to make it a little more sophisticated to correct these weak points. So here's the basic scheme, right? There's some cover text or cover message, which is a quantum state C here. Alice is sending this to Bob. This is the ostensible reason for the communication, but in fact, Alice and Bob don't really care about the content of this message. They have to seem to care about it, though, or Eve will get suspicious. That's part of the idea of you have to use a code that looks like it's a reasonable choice for the error levels that the channel seems to have. Then in addition to this cover message, there's also a secret message, which could be either a classical string of bits or a quantum state, S. In addition to these things, Alice and Bob share a secret key. So what I mean by a secret key is it's a string of random bits that are known to the two of them and to no one else, so like a one-time pad. And I will assume that it's as long as I need it to be for whatever I need it to do, which is one of these little practical details that I'll leave for someone else. Then Alice does an encoding of the cover text and the secret message. And that encoding depends on the secret key. In such a way, well, I'll say what that means. She then sends the encoded message through the channel. Bob, when he receives it, he also knows the secret key, so he can apply a decoding that allows him to get out, well, C, though we don't really care about that, but also S, which is what he does care about. But Eve, who lacks the secret key, what she sees is essentially what Bob sees averaged over all possible values of the key, right? And what that should look like to Eve should be some plausible noisy channel in the middle, like, say, a binary symmetric channel or a depolarizing channel or something like that. There also is the possibility that there could be actual intrinsic noise in the channel that Alice and Bob have to contend with as well. So in one case, there's no real noise in the channel and all of the noise originates from Alice. In the other, Alice and Bob have to deal with noise in the channel as well as with Eve. Okay. Yes?
So you've got that point between the same decoder
to D, but she doesn't know what secret key to use. That's right. That's right. So if she knew the key, she could also apply D and get the message out, in principle. Okay. So let's look at the classical binary symmetric channel. Now, for now, I'll assume there's no noise in the channel, so all the noise that Eve sees comes from Alice. All right. All the noise is really secret information. I'm going to use quantum-looking notation so that when I go to the quantum case, it'll generalize immediately. So here's a state rho, which is a classical string of bits. Each bit passes through a binary symmetric channel with bit flip probability p. So we write that like this. Well, the fonts clearly didn't quite go through, but that's okay. Anyway, you can think of this as being having a probability of 1 minus p of a bit going through with no error, and a probability p of having the bit flipped, so 0 to 1 or 1 to 0. But I can rewrite this in a slightly different form, exactly the same channel. So let's define a different quantum operation. We take rho, and with 50% probability, we flip it. With 50% probability, we leave it alone. So what do you get when you do that? Well, you get a random bit. Right. In other words, the output bit has no relation at all to the input bit. Okay. And I can rewrite this channel like this. So now it's a probability of 1 minus 2p of sending a bit unchanged through the channel. And with probability 2p, that bit is replaced with a random bit. Okay. So these are exactly the same channel. I'm just writing them in two different ways. But now if I think about what the binary symmetric channel does like this, it suddenly tells me how I can hide some information in the channel in such a way that Eve can't read it. What Eve is going what Alice is going to do is she's going to replace some of the bits with her hidden bits, with her secret bits. Only she's going to first randomize them using the secret key such that they look like completely random bits. So, here's the protocol. Alice and Bob choose an error-correcting code which encodes k bits of the cover text into n bits of the full code word. And you have to choose n to be sufficiently large in order to have enough room to store all the secret bits. Okay. How big that is depends on the error probability of the channel they're trying to simulate. Okay. If the error probability is low, n will have to be bigger because it'll take longer to include enough errors. So now, using the secret key, Alice and Bob will choose a number of bits to randomize. This should follow the binomial distribution with probability 2p. So in other words, if I take this channel and repeat it n times, then there'll be a binomial distribution on the number of bits that get randomized. So m is that number of bits. And on average, the number that will be randomized will be roughly 2p times n. Okay. So you want 2p times n to be at least as long as the message they want to send. And in fact, you want it to be a little bigger, so the probability of fewer than that number of errors is vanishingly small. Okay. So it's a very simple idea, but I couldn't figure out how to say it without lots of words. Okay. So if the number of randomized bits is larger than the length of the message, which in general you want to err on that side, Alice just pads out her message with some extra bits in any state she likes. Zero is fine. Okay. Now, what she does then is she chooses a random subset of m bits out of this n-bit code word. Okay. Now, it isn't random. It isn't truly random. What she uses is she uses her key that she shares with Bob, plugs that into a function that tells her which subset to choose. And you can easily set up such a map by just enumerating all such subsets, labeling them, and then using your key to choose one of those labels with equal probability. So she switches her hidden bits, her stego bits, for those m bits of the code word. Okay. She then applies m bits of a one-time pad to those bits that she substituted in. So now those bits appear to Eve to be completely random. But Bob will be able to undo this operation because he also shares the key. Okay? She transmits them through the channel to Bob. He can pull out the subset because he knows which subset was chosen because it was a function of the secret key. He can undo the one-time pad because he shares that. That also comes from the secret key. And then he can read off the message. However, because Eve doesn't have the key, what she will see is a number of bits, m, that have been randomized where m was chosen from the correct binomial distribution, at least to a good approximation. And to her, it'll look exactly like a binary symmetric channel with probability p. So are there any questions about this? I know it's kind of dense, but the idea is fairly simple. So everywhere there's an error, Eve sees an error, or Eve sees a randomized bit, is where Alice substituted one of her stego bits.
So Eve doesn't notice a dramatic increase in error
channel? Well, so in order to make this work, Alice and Bob have to have the channel always appear to have the same error rate within that. So that means that even when they don't want to send hidden information, they still have to screw up anything they send through it. Right. So. But I will address this point. If Eve knows what the channel is, has good knowledge of what the channel is, then there's then we have to do something else slightly more complicated, which I'll get to in just a minute.
Maybe that doesn't
So m is more like the mean number of errors. assuming that there's no intrinsic noise in the channel, right? But if there is intrinsic noise, then M is going to be represent a little bit of excess noise that they're going to add, and then it has to be within the standard deviation, basically. Yeah. So, but we'll see that in just a second. Do you have a question?
Is there a no-go that if you don't make these assumptions, then you can't
do it? Well, my belief is yes, but I haven't proven that you can't do it. But I don't think you... Well, I'll say later exactly what I think is true and what I think isn't true, but well,
I mean... If you don't make an assumption,
so if I just assume she doesn't know, okay, I assume she doesn't know their key. If she doesn't know exactly what the channel is, then that gives them some margin to operate in, right? If she does know exactly what the channel is, even there, they can still put in a small excess amount of noise so long as they don't make it too big. That will let them send... Basically, if they spread it out over enough distance, they can send an arbitrarily large amount of information, but only a finite amount, before Eve gets suspicious. But if they don't know, then my belief is that they can communicate at some finite rate.
I mean, to make it kind of hypnosis work, kind of have to penalize Eve for declaring that something fishy is going on when it's not going on.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she could just always declare something fishy is going on.
If Eve's a nasty warden, she puts Alice and Bob in solitary and doesn't let them talk to anybody until their sentence is up. So, you know, I'm assuming that she has legitimate reasons to want to allow people to communicate. So, for instance, you know, even in totalitarian states, they never completely shut down the mail service, even though people could use it to send subversive messages, because there's a big economic penalty to having no mail. Whereas nowadays, with email mailing lists and spam, there's an economic penalty to having mail, but that's a different story. Okay, so I think I'm going to answer some of these questions, but did you?
Okay, maybe not with the end, but I mean, it just seems that you will always know that something's because she knows what the noise level is. There's nothing.
If they communicate forever.
Well, not even forever. I mean, isn't it just some finite time that she will see the noise that was higher than the noise that was...
No, it isn't, and I'll say why in a little bit. At least I
can imagine that scenario where Alice and Bob engage in the equivalent of card counting, where they look for statistics of errors that they aren't inducing, look for a point where the mean reversion is in the wrong direction, and then put their errors in.
That's assuming they can monitor the errors in the channel, which I don't assume.
Well, because we won't pay as many corporations. There's probably enough space equal for infinite amount of data.
If they can monitor the channel themselves, I think that's true. But they don't know what the noise is going to be, right? So that's the thing. In a sense, that's true. I mean, in a sense, if the channel is truly noiseless, then the standard deviation is zero, and there's no slop, if you will, in which to hide information. If we could build truly noiseless channels, the world would be a wonderful place.
Does classical stenography, I mean, can you basically define the rate for classical stenography based on the entropy of the code?
So stenography is shorthand. Steganography is...
can I use, in classical case, can I measure the rate for classical steganography by understanding the entropy of the word within which I will encode?
I think that something like that is correct, but I'd have to think about it, and I don't want to pause now. But basically, yeah, having a lot of having a message that's highly variable, in some sense, works to your advantage, or having a noisy channel. Okay, so let's look at the noisy case, and I'll get to the security argument in a little bit. If there's noise in the channel, you can actually use essentially the same protocol. You're, in a sense, just adding a little extra noise, and then more noise happens in the channel. It still looks like a noisy channel, and in fact, for a binary symmetric channel, If you emulate a binary symmetric channel and you apply another binary symmetric channel to it, the result looks like a binary symmetric channel, but with a different error rate. However, of course, the noise in the channel could disturb the hidden message that Alice is trying to send to Bob. So to get around that problem, she first has to encode her stego bits using an error correcting code. So that's what I call the inner code, and then the code she's using for the cover text is the outer code. That means that the number m of bits, of randomized bits that she's adding, is larger than the number of actual hidden bits that she's sending. That's the size of her full code. So basically, exactly the same protocol goes through, only here, Alice substitutes the m bits of her encoded bit, and then she applies the one-time pad. The nice thing about about additive noise like this is that if you take a good code and then you add a random string to it, it's still a good code, right? You just, because it commutes with the noise, so you can just undo that process and then decode. So you can use essentially exactly the same protocol. Now, if Alice and Bob emulate a binary symmetric code with probability Q, and then they pass it through a physical channel with bit flip rate P, then the resulting channel appears to Eve to have bit flip rate P prime, which is this quantity here. And if we assume that Eve actually has pretty good knowledge of the code, of the channel, then probably you don't want P prime to be very different from P. So I'm going to write that as P prime is P plus delta P, where delta P is this difference. And that means that Q has to be fairly small. So in other words, that's another reason why they have to spread their information over a fairly large amount of cover text in order for it to not look suspicious. Okay. So I'll try to quantify that in just a bit. So here's a kind of picture of what's going on. Bob wants to send the absolutely vital message to Alice consisting of the single bit 1. However, he knows the physical channel is noisy. So he first encodes that 1 using a repetition code as 111. Alice first does this. She chooses a random subset of 3 bits out of the code word, these 3 red bits right here. And she substitutes in her 3 bits for that. Here I'm actually XORing rather than substituting, but it works exactly the same. Then she applies a one-time pad to that, so you get some randomized version of that string. Then here, this is what I mean when I said I'm XORing. She applies this to the cover text. The encoded cover text is also a single bit 1 using the 10-bit repetition code. So this is what she ends up sending into the channel. In the channel, some bit flips can also happen. So say one of the red bits gets flipped and one of the blue bits gets flipped. So they don't really care about bit flips to the blue bits because they don't hold any information, any hidden information. But so long as there aren't too many bit flips, Bob can decode this code, figure out what the error was. So the error is this string of 3 bits plus this bit flip on that the physical channel applied. So he gets out the string 110. He applies the one-time pad, which he also knows because he shares the key with Alice. And so he gets the string of bits 011. Now, this is not a valid code word, but he can then do error correction on there to correct it to 111 and decode the bit 1, which is what Alice sent. And if Eve intercepts the code word in the middle here, to her it just looks like the string 11111, etc., with various bit flip errors that had happened along the way. And if you imagine doing this many times over a large block, or doing a much larger block code that encodes more information, the same kind of principle applies. And you can emulate a binary symmetric channel exactly. So how much secret key is consumed? So what did Alice and Bob use the secret key for? So they used it to choose the value, the number of randomized bits m. But in fact, as the block becomes large, that's almost always very, very close to n times 2p. So in fact, you can more or less neglect the amount you need for that. They have to choose the random subset of m bits. So there are n choose m such subsets. So you need roughly log of that number of bits. And then, of course, the one-time pad uses m bits. So going to the limit of large n and blah, 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 you end up with some kind of expression, which is, you know, is just a bit of algebra. And then you can figure out how much, at what rate the key is consumed in order to communicate at this given rate. And here we plot it more or less as a function of the intrinsic channel error rate p, and then the difference delta p, the extra noise that they're adding. Okay. All right. So because the quantum case looks exactly the same as the classical case, I'm just going to quickly describe that, and then I'll go through the argument for why this is secure. So that's just saying what a quantum channel is. I'm going to assume again that we're applying a channel to each of the qubits individually. And in this case, it's a depolarizing channel. So you can think of that as just taking the block sphere and shrinking it uniformly inside of itself. And we write that like this. It's sort of a natural generalization of the binary symmetric channel to the quantum case. With probability p, nothing happens to the qubit. With probability 1 minus p, nothing happens. With probability p, one of the three Pauli errors happens with equal probability. Now, in the same way, I'm going to introduce this new operation, which is called t. Anyone know why it's called t? T for twirling. So here, with equal weight, you apply I, x, y, or z. And the very nice thing about this operation is that no matter what quantum state rho you start from, you end up in the maximally mixed state. So you always end up in the state I over 2. And just as I did with the binary symmetric case, I can rewrite this as a mixture of the identity channel and this twirling channel. Right? So with probability 4/3 p, I take a qubit and I replace it with a maximally mixed qubit. With probability 1 minus 4/3 p, I leave the qubit unchanged. Okay, and now I'm using exactly the same trick. Alice is going to hide her qubits by substituting them for bits in the code word. So here's the protocol. Now they're using a quantum error correcting code that encodes k cover bits, cover qubits into n qubits. Again, using the secret key, they determine the number of bits to maximally mix, and then choose a random subset of m bits. Alice swaps her m stego qubits in for those m qubits. She twirls each of them. So this is like the quantum equivalent of a one-time pad, only instead of just either leaving it unchanged or applying an x, you're leaving it unchanged, applying an x, y, or a z. So it takes 2 bits of secret key to twirl each qubit. So you use 2 m bits of secret key. And now, to Eve, this string of qubits would look like a maximally mixed register.
Sorry, so for each qubit that Alice is doing something to, she's only encoding one bit of message.
She's using one qubit of message, yes.
Okay. So you can do the hidden message is classical message?
This is now a quantum message.
It's a quantum message.
Yeah.
You should use two error bits.
No, I'm confused. Maybe you have to set the decoding.
Okay. So she's now replaced m bits in this code word with her m hidden, with her m stego qubits. She's twirled each one of them.
Okay.
So each of them looks to Eve now like a maximally mixed state. She sends this to Bob. This is the noiseless case,
yeah,
okay, by the way.
Okay, yeah, fine.
This is
noise.
Okay.
Noisy case.
Okay, so we'll...
No, I guess I see the noisy case.
Yeah, okay.
Okay,
good. He already sees the end of the talk, so that's all right. He can leave early. So she sends it to Bob. He knows which subset... So this part is exactly like the classical case, right? So he knows which subset of M bits holds the message. He knows the string of two M bits that were used for the twirling operation. So he can pull those qubits out, he can untwirl them, and recover the state that Alice hid in there. Okay? And if Eve intercepts and looks at it, it will look like M depolarization events, M maximally mixed bits. Okay. And then here's a picture of what that looks like. Now, if there's noise in the channel, again, Alice starts by using a quantum error correcting code to protect the secret information. So now the M stego bits that she's embedding is the M stego bits of her inner code, and it's encoding fewer qubits. How many fewer depends on what the actual intrinsic noise of the channel is. And Bob, of course, needs to know what that code is as well, but there it's just a standard error correcting code, and he can decode it. So there's no secret key needed for that. So in fact, if you ask how much key is used in this case, it's exactly the same here, except there's two M here instead of M. It's exactly, otherwise the protocols are identical.
Sorry.
Yes?
Maybe I wasn't paying attention to the classical case. In the classical case, you were replacing the bits again with the stego bits, or you were flipping them?
Either way works.
Okay.
Either way works.
Okay.
But I mean, in my picture, in the picture here, I was flipping them, which
yeah.
I shouldn't have been doing because I think it's clearer if you replace them.
But in the quantum case, there's no analog really flipping.
Right. In the quantum case, you're just swapping. That's why I think it's better to describe the classical case in here. I mean, so in a way there is, but I don't want to get into that, any equivalent of flipping, but I don't want to get into that. Okay.
Is there a reason that in the quantum case you assume that the one-time pad is a classical pad?
No. It could be, for instance, shared e-bits. So you can obviously generate a one-time pad using that.
But generate the one-time e-bit pad without learning.
So you mean, can they actually send key through this? In general, no. I mean, in general, it consumes more key than you could send. Right. Now, obviously, if Eve is asleep at the switch, you know, if you can make some fairly strong assumptions about Eve not being a very efficient eavesdropper, then maybe you could do it. But assuming that she's watching like a hawk, you know, then you can.
It looks like if Alice and Bob always talk via teleportation, they always do entanglement distribution first. They do they still entanglement. They only talk in teleportation. There's no way if we know anything about what they're talking to start with. What I mean, what's the problem with that kind of protocol to do this stigmatically?
They're not communicating randomly as one another, which is a red flag.
Yeah.
Maybe let's get to the end. Because I have more questions along this line, but it seems like a longer and separate discussion.
Okay. Basically, I'm assuming that Eve would want to prevent them from sharing resources that would allow them to communicate without her knowledge. Would be what?
Yeah. In that case, a noisy channel would be that resource.
Well, okay, now that I've revealed to the world that you can do this, then yeah. Yeah, Stephanie.
Yeah, I have one question. So, as you say, even in the classical case, if they look at the message and determine that it's innocent, so what you say is, so she basically reads the message, so you're saying you construct some channel that looks like.
Yes.
But, I mean, if Eve would read the classical message, which is before the decoding,
Okay, so that brings me to this question. Now, there's a big difference between the classical case and the quantum case in this respect. If Eve, so in the classical protocol, in the paradigm of Simmons that I said at the beginning there, it was assumed that Eve was passive. She just looked at things but didn't change them. But in the quantum case, of course, looking at things does change them. So there is, in some sense, no real such thing as a passive eavesdropper when you're sending quantum information. So if she really looks at every state that goes by her, then you can't send quantum information. Okay, so that basically would prevent Alice and Bob from doing that. Yes?
Is that true for degenerate quantum?
I don't know. In this sense that you mean if she...
There is some information that could be transferred still, if she measures...
It's just, can Bob retrieve that information? That's the thing that... I have not thought of this question, and I don't know. The thing is, if Bob can't actually retrieve that message, even with the key, then can't retrieve that information, then I don't know. But it's possible that there might be ways of fitting a little bit of information in that wouldn't be collapsed by Eve's measurement. My guess is that in general, you can't send much, if any, that way, just because if you think about the way an error correcting code works, you know, you move into different subspaces based on the error that happens, and in some sense, the hidden information is in a superposition of these subspaces. So when Eve measures it, she's going to kill it. But whether you can, you know, okay. So, yeah.
Well, also, who is for Eve just to measure the syndrome? Because if Alice and Bob know she's only going to do that, then they don't have to use state arbitrary messaging.
Well, she can, so.
So she has to sometimes measure everything.
Right.
She certainly will collapse.
So this is more or less the point. This will still work provided, so first of all, for Eve to be an effective monitor, she has to at least from time to time do random checks, you know, demand what is this state psi, you know, show me the computer that you use to calculate it, provide, you know, whatever. I need to verify that it is what you say it is. Now, she probably doesn't want to do this for every single message because it's a lot of work. Just like, you know, they don't, every time a letter goes through the secret police's hands, they don't go and interrogate the people who sent it. They only do that once in a while when they have some, you know, either randomly or when they have some reason to be suspicious. The other thing is, if she doesn't actually measure the syndrome, I mean, so if she measured the syndromes every time but doesn't check everything, then you can't send quantum information. But, you know, if she only checks certain code words, even only checks the syndromes, then you can still send quantum information this way. Yes?
I think my question also applies to the classical setting, mm-hmm. where you're assuming that Eve can perfectly decode Alice's message, right?
Yeah.
And look at it. Mm-hmm. So she could first decode it and then re-encode it into the error.
You mean she would just correct the errors?
So she can always filter signal if she wanted.
So this is like a sensor who opens the mouth, writes a spelling error.
Right. So
actually, literally, spelling errors is a known way of saying argument.
Yeah.
So,
right. So the thing is that yes, you're right. That's why in the classical paradigm, they assume that the eavesdropper is passive. Okay. Now, there is one other case, or there's kind of two other cases. I only really mentioned one. One is instead of sharing a classical key, if they share EPR pairs, then they really only need to send classical information through the channel. And then this problem doesn't apply, so long as Eve doesn't correct the syndromes, correct the errors along the way. Of course, in this case, where Eve intercepts some of the messages but not all, you know, I mentioned that they could use quantum error correcting codes to allow for that. But another approach would be to share EPR pairs, only keep the ones where Eve didn't measure the syndromes, and then you can do teleportation using the shared EPR pairs, even if you don't initially share EPR pairs. Yes?
Further to the same question. As you say, one of the things that's what we need to do is maintain the error rate of the channel.
Yes.
So it seems to be important for Bob to be able to detect when a message is or isn't being sent.
Yes. So I didn't go into this, but if you make certain assumptions about what Eve typically does, then it's possible for Alice and Bob to tell when she checked. It's just the same way that in quantum cryptography, in ordinary quantum cryptography, you can tell if there's an eavesdropper there or not. You stick in some qubits in pre-agreed bases and then look to see if they arrive in the right bases. And then you can tell if Eve did something or not. I forgot what the also was. But I'll remember one day, long after this talk is over. Even if they're not really sending any information to each other, Alice could encode a little message saying, to keep the noise rate up, I am encoding, you know, m qubits of gibberish in this message, or something like that. Okay. Yes?
I don't mean to harp on this bootstrap question, but I'm very intrigued.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to understand whether or not, in the end, if they start with some EPR pairs, whether they can generate all the randomness they need. Now, my initial intuition was to agree with what you had said before about it, but now I'm thinking, why is it that you can't use some type of entanglement assisted error correcting code to increase the amount of number of EPR pairs they start from the number they start with while still looking totally innocent?
Okay, so I don't know that they can't do that, but I do know that a typical entanglement assisted code, you boost your rate by an amount equal to the amount, at most the amount of entanglement that you can send. That's typically the way it works. So you wouldn't come out ahead this way, is basically my intuition. But that's just intuition. And I mean, the sort of standard ways we construct these codes doesn't mean that's the only way to construct them. Maybe you could construct ones that would work. The thing is, it has to be something that looks like gibberish to Eve, but not to Bob, right? So that's where I have trouble seeing how you're going to get around that, right? So when will that happen? Either when Alice and Bob shared a secret classical bit or where they share halves of an EPR pair. In other cases, if it looks like gibberish to Eve, it looks like gibberish to Bob as well. I mean, you can try to do, you know, in standard cryptography, you use a key that's much shorter, or you could use like pseudo-random numbers or something like that to try to boost it. And then if you make computational assumptions about the limits of Eve's ability to decode things, then maybe you could do it, right? So there I don't rule it out. I'm taking a kind of more, given my ignorance of information theory, it's ridiculous for me to say this, but I'm trying to take a more information theoretic point of view of what's possible and what's not possible, rather than what's practical given from a kind of more computational point of view. Yeah?
Yeah, I was just saying, related to that, how do we power Gordetsky the law that says that you can't do that? There's no way to increase the number of units while there's some conservation law between the number of messages you send and the number of units have shared. So it's impossible to do this.
Okay. Yes?
I try to ask about the model.
Okay.
If ever allow Alice and Bob to do any common communication, because all the communication is private, how can she prevent them from sharing EPR pairs to start with? Unless she occasionally intercepts everything and requests Alice and Bob declare what quantum state they're sending and she checks that.
She does.
No, but it's not going to help, right? I mean,
Alice can make a measurement.
No, because if ever she does that and they are unable to satisfy her, then she forbids them to communicate ever again.
But I still want to understand this. So the model is that Alice and Bob are not allowed to share entanglement at all.
I mean, it might amount to that. Yeah. I mean, it might amount to that. But you know, but I don't know. I mean, are there ways that they could share entanglement that would still...
No, but I mean, you have a quantum channel. Why can't we just share entanglement with using quantum channel? So Eve says, you know, tell me what quantum state you have, but does that mean Alice and Bob are allowed to say, oh yes, we've been building this complicated entangled state to use in, you know, distributed Torres algorithm or something?
Mm-hmm.
Eve says, no, that's not allowed, or Eve says, okay, fine, show me what it is.
Well,
because it impacts what they can do, right?
Right. So, I mean, the strictest thing would be she doesn't allow them to exchange entangled states at all. There are other states that one could distribute, for instance.
But how do they know? How do they know
he cannot lose an entanglement or not? Because, say, I send half of the EVs to you, and someone else caught the other half and asked me what I have been sending. I make a measurement on my side before saying what it is.
Yeah, pretend it's not entangled any time you get asked about it.
No, but I mean...
The state I'm sending, because I have to make a measurement first and find out what residual state is captured.
Okay, so when she does that, she doesn't have to tell... okay, so say you're not allowed to send an entangled state, right? Then you could say, okay, this is the output of some quantum computer or something like that. You can say, give me the computer, I'm going to run it backwards and see if I get back your initial state. Now, you can't do that, I think, with shared entanglement. So, for example, that would be a way in which...
But hold on, I mean, that's assuming that they actually give you the whole quantum computer, right? I mean, if they have some quantum computer and some kind of private quantum storage, then they can, you know, use the quantum storage as kind of a measurement, but hold it as quantum storage, and then only later when they're willing to, or when required to produce the state, they can make the measurements on it. And then the quantum computer will work just the same as if you stick real measuring devices in place of this private quantum storage.
Why would there be measuring devices?
Well, the point is that when Eve comes around and says, show me your quantum computer, Alice says, okay, here it is, but she's put, you know, measurement devices in place of this coherent storage.
I don't think I can satisfy you here, but...
Thinking about a quantum computer anyway, rather than just what state was
set. Yeah, I mean, she could say, give me the state if it looks... like, and I mean, this is a question. What would be a legitimate reason to share a quantum state? I can't really answer that. These channels do not exist, right? This is all science fiction. But
I mean, I can think of lots of legitimate reasons to share quantum states, but it's a little bit hard to think of what you could do with a quantum state that would not let you generate a tangent.
In fact, the L-Quadding codes itself are all maximum entangled state, if you look at the transmission number.
Sure. But they're not entangled between Alice and Bob. Right? They're just entangled with each other. Right? So Evie's not looking at them one bit at a time. She's looking at the entire code word. So, I mean, it doesn't seem to me like I'm going to be able to satisfy your question here. But, you know, I mean, in a similar way, it's basically impossible to truly guarantee that you can't send hidden information in an innocent-looking classical message. If you can write down, you know, 10 to the, you know, well, not 10, but 2 to the 500 innocent messages and have a big lookup table. This one stands for this string, this one stands for that string, and that's impossible to crack, right? You know, at some level, some kind of plausibility assumptions have to go into this, and I haven't tried to make those rigorous. What Eve can and can't do, what kinds of messages she could or would or would not allow.
It sort of seems like, and now I'm looking at this from some slightly different perspective, just sort of digging these two commentaries that are happening. It seems a little bit like the more quantum view of the story is that as long as Alice and Bob are sharing entanglement, which they can do with the resources they've been given,
mm-hmm.
that the hard thing to do is to prove that they're not sending information to each other rather than to prove that they are. And so the challenge Eve has is to show that in fact they are not sending information. I think that's a real challenge for Eve. Because under all the assumptions that are written down, like what is sending what information? Well, if I can get entangled pairs across, then I can do quantum teleportation. So that's going to be the protocol under which I operate. Right? And so any entangled pair that makes it through is going to be a problem for Eve. Right?
Any entangled pair or any, provided they can communicate classically as well. So it becomes the same as the classical steganography problem. And there, I think that it works.
It sounds like if you try to send an entangled pair and then Eve asks you what it is, and you measure it, like throwing the weapons overboard, then you've lost the entanglement, but you still have a problem because it looks like you're sending random looking classical. Which is probably also
right. So the question, I think, is there something Eve would allow that, I mean, I think it's plausible that Eve could prevent them, assuming that they can't hide information in this way, could prevent them from sharing secret information.
It's actually maybe in this context, I mean, Eve would be saying, well, here's what you're allowed to have. Give that to them.
Maybe. I mean, there has to be some narrow window of things that she's willing to allow that won't allow them to communicate secretly. And I have not tried to figure out what that is. Okay. So I'm already well over time. So shall I try to finish this, or do we want to stop? Okay. All right, so this is getting to the question that you asked before, which is, can they communicate even if Eve knows very well what the channel should be, or even if she knows exactly what the channel should be? And the question is, more or less, if we taking the, actually, it doesn't matter whether it's the binary symmetric channel or the depolarizing channel, the expressions are exactly the same. If we look at the difference between N uses of a channel with the correct error rate p and one with a slightly higher error rate p plus delta p, then it's bounded by this quantity in the limit where delta p is very small by p compared to p. And that means that if I choose delta p to be more or less some small number divided by the square root of n, then Eve will not be able to detect that there's excess noise in the channel. The amount of information that they can send is basically proportional to delta p. So that means that if they are willing to have the size of their encoding go up like the square of the length of the message they want to send, then they can send as much hidden information as they like without Eve becoming suspicious, provided they have a big enough key. Now, this, however, doesn't amount to a non-zero rate. So this puts a bound on her ability to detect it. But what we really need is to prove that if they try to communicate at an asymptotic rate, that she can always detect that. I have not proven that, but I think it's very plausible that she can anyway. Basically, she collects enough statistics, she will eventually notice an excess of noise, no matter how small. Now, realistically, Eve's knowledge of the channel is probably not absolute. So there may be some window of uncertainty in which Alice and Bob can operate and send as much information as they like. Though, of course, they need then an unlimited supply of secret key. All right, now this approach I really like because I find it very simple. It's actually just swapping. I mean, your encoding is just swapping in qubits for other qubits, and as long as you do it in the right way with the right statistics, Eve cannot tell that you're doing it. However, it certainly comes nowhere near maximizing the amount of information you could hide. So let's take the noiseless case. Suppose that instead of just choosing a random subset of m bits and substituting, you know, random bits for them, you consider all possible strings of weight m over 2. Well, there are a lot more of those, right? So in fact, if you do an encoding where you map your string of hidden bits into low weight code words, then you can fit in a larger amount by roughly a factor of the log of n. So that's a big improvement because n is likely to be quite large. So one way to think about this is that instead of hiding information in individual bits that have errors, we're hiding information in error syndromes. So Bob extracts the information by doing the decoding and measuring what the syndrome is. So I have very little time, so I'm not going to go through all of this. But basically, you need to determine what the typical errors should be for this channel with a large code word. You enumerate those, you label each of them with some label J. You map your input, your hidden information. You apply a one-time pad to that, and then that random number J gets mapped to a particular error EJ, and Bob decodes by finding the corresponding error syndrome SJ. Okay, and then he has the one-time pad, so he can, from SJ, he finds J, and he can extract the secret message. And to Eve, it should look like, I mean, if she looks, it'll be a typical error, so it should look innocent. And you can do, surprisingly, maybe it's not that surprising, you can do the same thing with quantum information, only now you're storing your information more or less in a superposition of syndromes. So we just imagine we're again using a quantum error correcting code, and we set it up in such a way, which you can generally do, so that the encoding unitary, which takes the covered state plus ancillas to the encoded state, is actually the exact inverse of the decoding unitary. And you set this up such that if one of these typical errors, EJ, happens to the state and you apply the decoding thing, you get out the cover state, and then your ancilla is left in a state that represents the error syndrome. Right. So now, Alice represents her hidden quantum information as some general state. These are bit strings that we're taking superposition over different bit strings. We map this number k. Well, first we twirl this so it becomes a maximally mixed state. We apply a mapping where we map the number j to the syndrome of typical error sj. You then apply the encoding unitary, and the state that you get out looks like the correct encoded state with an equal, which is in an equal mixture of all of the typical errors. Now, this is not exactly the same as the true channel, but Eve can't tell them apart reliably. So Alice transmits this to Bob, and he does the whole procedure in reverse. So as long as Eve did not actually measure the syndromes, which will, you know, collapse this down to just one of these terms, then Bob can extract this state again. So that was all noiseless. What happens if there's noise? Well, the answer is that I don't really know what happens when there's noise. That is, I do know how to do error correction to compensate for noise, but I don't actually know the best way of doing this. And the reason is that now that we're storing information in syndromes instead of in bits, exactly how the channel affects the syndromes could be a very complicated thing. So you need to design some kind of error correcting code for that. I do have some techniques that work. You can, for instance, instead of allowing your errors to affect the entire string, you again choose some subset, though not necessarily a small subset, and encode only in that, so you can ignore errors that happen outside that. And then as the channel becomes noisier and noisier, you choose a smaller and smaller subset, et cetera. So I can estimate how well you can do this way, but I have no idea if this is the best approach. I mean, there could be a much better way of doing error correction. So I really don't know in this case what's the best you can do given a particular error rate. And in general, this approach might work well. I don't want to get into details because it's so late. But this approach might work for other types of channels as well. But you know, we haven't worked out any examples for that. But intrinsically, it seems reasonable. But again, how do you estimate the rates? We have not concluded. So to sum up, anyway, I presented a very simple model of classical steganography. And I should say this is just one type of steganography. I mean, there are as many different kinds of steganography as you know people can dream up. So this is just one approach, but there could be lots of others. But in our approach, you're hiding information by making it look like errors in a noisy channel. And you know, I showed how you could do almost exactly the same protocol in the quantum in the classical case. And calculated how much secret key is consumed with that, and then made an argument for how much information you could hide in using this protocol without Eve becoming suspicious. But there are lots of open questions. So first of all, what about more general channels? There's a sort of a point that is maybe not clear there. If you have a depolarizing channel or a binary symmetric channel, you can just concatenate it with another one, and all that you see is a difference in the error rate. If you have a more general channel and concatenate it with another channel, you actually, in general, will change the form of the channel. So you still want that to be fairly close. But what the best way of doing that is may depend on the channel. But it might be that you can do clever things where you can still make it look close to the channel that Eve expects. What's the capacity of quantum steganographic channels with noise? I don't know. In the noiseless case, I think you can argue that this syndrome encoding is as good as you can do, because basically all of the entropy that comes out of the channel is carrying secret information. But in the noisy case, I have no idea. Here we were not using the cover text for anything except cover. But a common thing that's done in classical steganography is where Bob actually knows what the cover text is ahead of time, and they can make use of that fact to try to squeeze some extra information in. Or they can use the choice of cover text to convey extra information. And what's the best way for Eve to detect whether or not this is going on? I use the diamond norm to put an upper bound on her ability, but you know, in general, she's not allowed to stick arbitrary states into this channel because that's under the control of Alice. So you know, what's the best thing for her? What's her best strategy to try to detect that hidden information is there? And you know, here we were just assuming generic error-correcting codes, but you know, one could try to work it out for particular actual classes of code. So there's lots of open questions, and I didn't even mention here the one that seemed to excite the most attention, which is, you know, what is an innocent quantum message that Eve would allow Alice to send to Bob that wouldn't in and of itself allow them to send secret information? So maybe that question also needs to be clarified. So, thank you very much. So there have been a lot of questions, but I'm happy to stand here and